Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
A factual data creation facility production.
I'm here. Welcome to the OFNT podcast, episode 237, which I'm calling Podcasting Lives. The title refers to one of Podcasting Incorporated's now canceled shows called Now Hear This, whose final episode was titled Podcasting is Dead. I think it should have been called My Podcast is Dead. I have some strong feelings on this subject and give my opinion in the podcast news section.
News.
Well, I guess it's time to kick this thing off now.
Yes? Okay.
Tech news. Apple's next iPhone will be one of the cheapest. Here's what to expect, unquote. And that's the headline from 9to5Mac.com. If you actually consider $500 as being cheap, well, Apple will have a phone for you. I guess $500 for an iPhone can not only be considered cheap, it could be considered very cheap. Of course, the article and I are referring to the upcoming iPhone SE, which will be in its fourth generation when it arrives, most likely coming this spring. The current generation of the SE, which is its third, is based on the iPhone 8 chassis with upgraded internals. Now, I've talked about the upcoming SE4 on this podcast before, but the closer the phone gets to its release date, the more solid the rumors about it are. Here are the latest rumors according to the article. While the current SE has a now puny 4.7 LCD display, rounded edges and a home button, the new SE4 will be based on the iPhone 14 chassis, as I mentioned before. It'll have a more modern 6.1-inch OLED screen, a flat edge design, Face ID, and the smaller version of that notorious notch. Like the old third generation SE, only one camera will be mounted around the back, unlike the two that the iPhone 14 featured. An action button will take the place of the mute switch, and the phone will be charged by USB-C versus the old Lightning connector. Now, if only Apple would use USB-C for its Magic series of peripherals, we would be lightning free. Internally, the new SE will be equipped with the latest A18 chip in order to run Apple Intelligence and have 8 gigs of RAM, which is double the amount the current SE has. Again, to be able to run that Apple Intelligence. There's no word if the base storage will be bumped up from the now 64 gigs. Now, I must admit, that's a lot of phone for $500, especially a phone coming from the giant fruit company. Unfortunately, people who prefer smaller phones will now have nowhere to go, as even Android phone manufacturers have given up on the small phone form factor. Google was rumored to be coming out with a small-sized phone this year, but that rumor turned out to be false. I've got my eye on the new SE4, but would wait for the generation that replaced that notch with the dynamic island, when and if that actually ever happens. So, if you're not into having the latest model iPhone, don't really need the best camera, and don't want to spend too much of your hard-earned money on a phone, the fourth generation of the iPhone SE might just be for you. It would also be a great first iPhone for your child and for an elderly person like myself. The Six Colors blog is reporting that founder and CEO, one Joe Chiani of Massimo, has resigned from the company after being removed from its board of directors. You might be thinking to yourself, what is Massimo and why would I care about it or its CEO?
Yes.
Well, Massimo is a maker of medical devices and holds a lot of patents, one of which Apple supposedly stole for the Apple Watch's blood oxygen monitoring feature. Massimo took Apple to court over this and won, which forced Apple to disable this feature going forward, starting with the Apple Watch 9. The CEO has refused to come to an agreement with Apple before and since that court case. The board removal and resignation is blamed on a proxy fight. But is it? Well, yes it is, but details are sketchy on what this fight is really about. But it seems shareholders are not satisfied with the returns on their stocks in the company. Apple had probably offered a bunch of money to either buy Massimo outright, or at least license the company's technology, but the former CEO, no doubt smelling blood in the water, thought he could squeeze the then world's richest company for even more money. Falsely thinking Apple would give into his demands over having to pull a feature for one of their best-selling products. After his resignation, it appears the gamble he took didn't pan out. Well, at least for him. And what's to say that Apple didn't have a guiding hand in this shareholder revolt?
Aw, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if an announcement will be made in the near future that Massimo has come to an agreement with Apple to license their technology or outright sell the company to them. Time, as always, will tell. Continuing with the Six Colors blog, their headline is, quote, iMore is no more, unquote. Yeah, the once beacon of Apple-related news website, iMore.com, is ceasing operations. iMore used to be my go-to site for breaking Apple news. That was back when Rene Ritchie was at the helm, and he was always guesting on CNET, Twit, and other tech media outlets, offering his insights about the giant fruit company. He always managed to be front row for Apple events and could be seen hanging out with Apple's Tim Cook. I remember the big launch event of the Mac Pro. You know, the return of the Cheese Grater model, with Ritchie standing beside Mr. Cook, telling him that Apple had absolutely nailed it. After Mr. Ritchie left iMore, the site maintained its status for a while, but seemed to start drifting. The last time I viewed the iMore website, it was so full of ads and what seemed to be AI-generated articles that I never revisited the site again. Mr. Ritchie now works for Google as a YouTube liaison.
What?
Grater. 9to5Mac.com, who I consider the successor to iMore for Apple News, has an article about what to expect at Apple's next event, which is believed to be happening sometime next month in October. What looks to be the star of the event is a redesigned M4 chip-equipped Mac Mini. The Mac Mini hasn't had a redesign since 2010, so I think it's past due for one, don't you think?
Yes.
The most significant change will be the size of the new Mini, with some speculating that it'll be slightly larger than the current Apple TV box.
What?
Wow.
And as an owner of the latest Apple TV streaming box, I can tell you that if true, that's really small. While the overall size of the device will shrink, the height is supposed to increase. I envision a smaller version of the Mac Studio. And besides the M4 chip, the Mac Mini will ditch its USB-A port.
Aww.
Yes, the end of an era is upon us. And just have two USB-C Thunderbolt ports. Along with that, it will have an HDMI and Ethernet port. So it seems we're giving up a port.
Huh?
To be clear, I'm just talking about the base model here. The Pro model will feature the M4 Pro chip and up to five USB-C ports, with one being located on the front of the chassis, which is a good deal. Another rumor is that the amount of RAM these models will come with has been bumped up to 16 gigs versus the 8 gigs the current models start with.
Yay!
And I'm all aboard for that news. Now, am I tempted by this? You betcha. Perhaps Father's Day. Other items to be announced are the M4 versions of the usual MacBook Pros, iMacs, and USB-C equipped peripherals.
Yay!
Finally, and the iPad Mini. While iPad Mini enthusiasts will have cause to celebrate, the oft-ignored-by-Apple tablet will most likely get the A18 chip, not the M4 chip.
Aww.
Like I've said in the past, if the iPad Mini was the runaway bestseller its fans claim it is, that Apple would update it more often with higher-end chips and screens. I've had two iPad minis in the past, the original blurry screen model, and later a Retina display model. While the portability was appreciated at the time, the ability to use cloud versions of apps and the streamlining of the larger iPad models have made that portability moot, well, at least for me. Others, of course, will disagree with that, but I have no interest in ever buying an iPad mini ever again. AndroidPolice.com has an article that makes the case for OnePlus taking the U.S. market more seriously, and I agree with that sentiment. The formerly, quote, upstart company, which it really wasn't, but that's a story for another time, has turned out some sterling examples of what an affordable high-end phone could and should be over the years. OnePlus seemed to be on the right track for making inroads into the U.S. market by inking a deal with a cellular carrier, T-Mobile, back in what someone once told me was the day, but that deal has long since elapsed. These days, U.S. consumers are consigned to purchasing OnePlus phones via Amazon.com. You see, most normies, and that's what I'm told non-tech-obsessed people are called, will still buy their phones from the carrier. They just don't have the time or patience to sort through a website to make a decision on what to buy. It's much easier to do that at a store so they can see and feel the phone. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yes.
Well, not only that, but a lot of phone models manufactured by OnePlus never become available for the U.S. market. I once was the proud owner of the OnePlus 3, which I ordered directly from the company after watching the virtual announcement of it online. Founder Carl Pei was a pioneer in regards to virtual events, amongst other things. That particular phone was as good as any other high-end phone at the time, and at a much more affordable price. Perhaps it's too late for the OnePlus brand in the United States. Like Mr. Pei himself, the market has moved on. These days, I'm more interested in Mr. Pei's Nothing brand, which besides phones has built up an entire ecosystem, including earbuds and watches around the brand. The headline of an article from AndroidPolice.com reads, Xiaomi SmartBand 9 is the best budget fitness tracker, again, unquote. Now, why would I bother even mentioning anything about a fitness tracker that could be purchased for around $7?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you why. This is a product category that I wish Apple would enter. Again, why? Well, because I'd like a product that could do most of what my Apple Watch can do, sans telling the time. I was, considered to be a so-called watch guy. I possess a rather large collection of Swiss-made mechanical beauties, which includes examples made by Rolex, Omega, Fortis, and more. I would like to start wearing them again, but I've gotten used to the convenience of receiving notifications and the fitness and health tracking of the Apple Watch. Now, I know Apple will never enter the budget market of any product category.
No!
But I'd be willing to pay the dreaded Apple tax for a fitness tracker that allowed me to get notifications and track said health and fitness. Now, I could wear both a mechanical watch and an Apple Watch, but that would just look stupid, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
The Xiaomi fitness tracker includes the basics, like heart rate, blood oxygen, sleep tracking, steps, calorie, and workout tracking. It features a big enough OLED screen, too. All that I would add to it is message, sports, and news notifications, and, you know, I'd be all set. I never reply to messages and email using my Apple Watch, and I certainly don't initiate or make phone calls using it. Ditto listening to podcasts. If Xiaomi can sell a fitness tracker with most of the features I require for a measly $7, why can't Apple make a $150 version of one with those added features I just described? But who am I kidding? An Apple Health and Fitness Band is a product that will never happen. You know, but one can always dream. I was watching, well, for some reason, the YouTube channel China Observer the other day, and they were showing that Huawei's Harmony OS, and that's the company's replacement for Android, has baked in advertisements that you can't dismiss.
What?
I'm not talking apps here. I'm talking the operating system itself. This appears to be just in Huawei's home market of China. Besides videos of this, the host showed Weibo, China's version of Twitter, which had posts from frustrated owners of Huawei phones over these forced ads. Huawei phones are not cheap either in China or other markets. Could you imagine having to sit through an advertisement before you can actually use your phone? I just hope other manufacturers don't think this is a good idea and implement it on their particular phones. But then again, the tech world seems to be headed that way. See LG putting screensaver ads on its televisions, even the expensive ones. Sheesh. 9to5Google.com got their hands on the new Google TV Streamer Box, the Big G's replacement for its Chromecast 4K streaming dongle, and they're liking it. The TV streamer is due to be released in October, but pricing hasn't been announced, well, as far as I can tell. The main complaints are that the streaming box is, quote, plasticky, and unlike the Chromecast it replaced, can't be hidden out of sight. And those are minor niggles indeed. The sleek design of the TV streamer with its slanted front is simple, but in my opinion, elegant. Unlike Apple's TV box, the TV streamer can be used as a home automation hub right out of the box. What's really impressive to me is the Google TV software. Judging by the article screenshots of it, it looks very simple yet futuristic. Google's new streaming box also has an upgraded HDMI 2.1 port, a much better remote, 4 gigs of RAM, and 23 gigs of onboard storage.
Wow!
If the price is right, I'd say Google's new TV streamer will be a winner. Then again, mostly old farts such as myself would be in the market for a streaming box such as this. The youngsters these days usually consume media on mobile devices or on computer screens. At least that's what I've observed. Update. The list price of the Google Streamer is going to be $99.
Whoa.
Now that's what I call a bargain. Side note. For some reason, Google is rumored to be getting rid of its great video conferencing app, Meet, ability to use television streamers such as this one, by taking that functionality out of Google's TV operating system. Yeah, that's Google's MO, it seems, unfortunately. Tech I'm using. Not much to report on here. I've been playing around with iOS 18.1 and the Apple intelligence it comes with for about a week now, and the only thing I use it for is the AI summary function within the email I receive. I still can't figure out how to use Apple's intelligence writer's tools on my MacBook Air's trackpad. Writer's tools work sort of fine with a mouse, though I don't think I'll be using it much. Now, I'm not in the habit of using Siri, and that's something I guess I'll have to start doing. But Siri did start working on CarPlay, so there's that. I did play around with the AI-enhanced photo editing tools, but besides being somewhat basic, these new editing tools don't hold a candle to Google's, especially the Apple version of Magic Erase. I mean, it does work, but it's not as intuitive or easy to use as Magic Erase. The other announced Apple Intelligence features are not coming until later in the year. All in all, these AI features are, at least to me, in the category of nice to have. Nothing about them are essential. Maybe this can be blamed on the you can't teach an old dog new tricks thing, but I don't know. I'm calling Apple Intelligence a bust for now, and iOS 18 as a whole along with it. I'm very disappointed with it all, as you could probably tell. The one thing that has improved with iOS 18 is Apple's sports app. In its first iteration, you had to fiddle around with it just to get it working. First, after picking the sports teams you wanted to follow, you then had to follow each individual game. I found that you had to have the Apple TV Plus app open also to get the sports app to work properly. Since the update, as long as you have the sports app open, you'll get play-by-play as well as scores displayed on your lock screen. This update of the Apple Sports app has been a recent highlight for me.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits.
go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Entertainment news. Like the tech news I'm using section, I have very little to report on. I did manage to watch the movie Wolves on Apple TV+. The movie starred Brad Pitt and George Clooney and was supposed to have a theatrical release, but that was abruptly canceled, and I can see why it was. Now, it wasn't a bad movie, but I think it would have flopped in theaters. As my lovely wife put it, too much talk and not enough action. The problem with Wolves wasn't just too much dialogue, it was not enough meaningful dialogue. It mostly consisted of unfunny put-downs that made me lose interest. The action scenes were good, not great, and could have been done a lot better. Towards the beginning of the movie, there's a foot chase scene that, besides being uninteresting, went on way too long. And also, there seemed to be something missing within most of the action scenes, like too little information. I don't know, I just can't put my finger on it. I must say that the start of the movie was great, but unfortunately, this was all a setup for disappointment. Wolves is billed as an action-slash-comedy, but I think it would have worked better as a straight action or thriller movie. The movie tried to have a twist ending, no doubt to set up a part two, but at that point, I didn't care enough about the characters to be surprised or even care enough to want a sequel of it. If Wolves gets a sequel, let's hope they spend more of the budget on writers. Writers that can weave a better tale. Podcast news. From RainNews.com comes the headline, Dead or Alive, unquote. As in, is podcasting dead or alive? The article highlights the final episode of the Slate-produced podcast, Hear Me Out, hosted by one Celeste Headlee. But hey, what's in the name?
Yeah, boy.
Who's described as a journalist, speaker, author, and public radio personality. Note the public radio personality part. That shows her out-of-touch elite pedigree. The title of this, thankfully, final episode is Podcasting is Dead. And the host goes on to whine to her guest, Nick Hilton, founder of Podo, a podcast production studio, and laments that the industry, in her words, just isn't the same. Gone are the high six-figure salaries, along with the added income of advertising revenue, and more importantly, the audience post-COVID lockdowns. I must remind you, hosts like this, Ms. Headlee, made the jump to podcasting from the world of taxpayer-funded national public radio, and commanded huge salaries with budgets for writers, editors, fact-checkers, audio engineers, and more. All while recording in studios equipped with the $5,000 Neumann microphones and multi-thousand-dollar audio interfaces. These elite types simply yacked about topics they heard within their leftist bubbles, ignoring what was and is occurring on the ground to common folk, who are way outside those comfortable bubbles in which Ms. Headlee and others like her reside. There were, and are, too many podcasts exactly like hers out there. The market is saturated to the max. Heck, I'm surprised that Slate still produces podcasts these days, at least under their own brand name. All I can say to the host is, welcome to reality and don't let the podcast studio door hit you in the rear as you exit the space. You and your ilk are the ones that ruined podcasting to a point where it might never return to its former state. The only good to come of your dalliance within it is that you and your fellow elites are leaving. On the opposite end is Megyn Kelly, former corporate news host who was abruptly canceled for saying the wrong thing. Ms. Kelly had the intelligence to see where things were heading. So, being a real journalist, started a podcast out of a spare room of her New York apartment with just a borrowed shotgun microphone and a consumer-grade audio interface. Instead of spouting elitist propaganda on her show, she talked about things that us peasants of the working class cared about, and of course her show took off. She eventually signed up with SiriusXM and added video for YouTube and other platforms, and now commands a larger audience than the corporate media she left behind. This is the future, and it's not what Ms. Headlee and her peers have been doing. All they've been doing is the same exact thing they did while under the National Public Radio umbrella. The only difference being getting paid a lot more money for doing so. Good riddance. You know, I might do a part two on this on next week's episode because despite this harsh rebuttal, Good points were made, especially by the guest, Nick Hilton. The Magnus Protocol horror genre podcast first season has come to an end. Season 2 starts in February. I must say that the predecessor to the Magnus Protocol, the Magnus Archives, was much more entertaining. Archives had longer episodes, so there seemed to be fewer of them, and in my opinion, they were a lot more interesting. Due to the success of the Magnus Archives, Rusty Quill, the podcast production company and network, raised almost $1 million by a GoFundMe towards the production of a follow-up, which eventually became the Magnus Protocol. Yes, production standards are better. Yes, there are more characters to listen to. But I'd settle for less of both for a more compelling story. I think the folks over at Rusty Quill used a lot of the GoFundMe money that was intended for the Magnus Protocol for other projects, of which they have many. Hopefully the second season of the Magnus Protocol gets better, and this initial season was just to set things up. The drama podcast I'm listening to the most these days is Malevolent, which I touched on in the last episode. Other dramas you might enjoy are The Strata, Haunted, the audio drama, Ominous Thrill, and the granddaddy of them all, the No Sleep podcast. To listen to these dramas and other podcasts, well, of course, you'll need a good podcast listening app. One of the better ones out there is Pocket Casts. The app has been around since 2011 and has managed to keep improving over the years, and this despite roadblocks put in the developer's way. In 2018, Pocket Casts was sold to a consortium of international public radio entities, which included NPR and the BBC. The idea was that Pocket Casts would become the official app of public radio and the consortium could monetize their content via Pocket Casts. Though the original devs were still on board, money seemed to be diverted elsewhere, causing Pocket Casts to stagnate. And this while other podcast listening apps caught up and surpassed Pocket Casts in features. In 2021, the parent company of WordPress, Automattic, agreed to acquire Pocket Casts, and the app has improved steadily ever since. Once a one-time purchase, then a so-called freemium app, Pocket Casts has now gone to a subscription-based model. But now you can get 1 year of Pocket Casts Plus gratis. I'll put a link in the show notes. While I don't agree with the current monetization method, 1 year free is a good thing. Pocket Casts is the best podcast listening app I've ever used, and if you're a regular listener, you know I've used a lot of podcast apps in my time. And Pocket Casts are slowly adding support for podcasting 2.0 features. So give Pocket Casts a try. Well, the price is right, at least for 1 year. Though this may sound like what's known as a native advertisement for Pocket Casts, just so you know, I'm receiving no benefits from this. Well, the music is playing on this autumn evening where the effects of a recent hurricane down south is making itself known. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated and go right back into the show. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and that's only if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Hey, isn't it a bit damp and chilly out there? Well, do us all a favor and get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out. See ya.